You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Can only come from you. Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
about you now. Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me,
people.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people,
where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is?
What's with your life?
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You gotta learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope everything is going to be good for you. Hope this weekend will be great for you, that you can get a chance to do everything that you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not, and it has to be done, you will get it done, because you always get it done. That's right. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives. That is timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that, and then the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Monday from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, hosted by Jihad Ahmed, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. And then from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Cambon and her daughter, Nataki Cambon, Black Therapy Central. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparation with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday, today is Friday, oh, then at 8 p.m. Eastern on Friday, it'll be Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. That's right, tonight at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening. Tomorrow, Saturday, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it will be Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba has been taking our people to the continent for many years. Give Brother Bomani a call. See if you can get the hookup, the trip of a lifetime. At 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. If you want to see photos of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. And upcoming tours is April 2nd through the 12th, Senegal and Gambia. May 24th through June 4th, Ghana. November 18th through November 29th, Tanzania. These trips are $3,700 per person. Very reasonable. There's a deposit, put down a deposit. You can pay on it
monthly, weekly, whatever, until the $3,700 is paid up. That includes everything. Everything you need to make this a trip of a lifetime. All the documents, everything. Everything that you inquire about is on the website, or give Brother Bamani a call. Brother Baba Rinoco, once again, Rinoco's trips are not happening. Rinoco was always happening, and he is happening, of course. He has a return to the Nile Valley with Baba Rinoco, Zoom lecture series tonight and tomorrow. Part one is tonight, the 29th, from 8 to 9:30. Then part two is tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 12:30. These are Eastern times, and Rinoco, of course, is out west. Let me see if I can dig this out here. I can see it. To purchase, go to Eventbrite. Go to Eventbrite and put in Rinoco. Enter Rinoco. R-U-N-O-K-O. Put in Rinoco in the search field, and all the information will come up. It's $25 for both sessions. If you are a patron, and I'm a patron, it is free. Another he's going to have in February 6th on a Saturday. It's the following, that's next week Saturday. Eight great African historians. And then on the 12th of February, a conversation with Dr. Baina Bello, my dear friend out of Haiti, Dr. Baina Bello. That's going to be great. So that's what Rinoco's up to. Like I said, he's, unfortunately, he wants to get out, but hey, he's saying it's been quite a while now, and the longer it's going to be, who knows? But you can check out Baba Rinoco. He is still departing information and knowledge and presenting it to us. And of course, you know, if you know Rinoco, he's got slides, he's got the information, he got pictures that he has taken, and he is a primary researcher. He has been around the world documenting the information of African people. So, right on, Baba Rinoco. Okay, what do we got here? Ah, yes. Yes. Habesha. Habesha Incorporated. Habesha stands for Helping Africans by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. Habesha Incorporated. These brothers and sisters are doing the work. You know, they are doing the work, and they deserve to be supported. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. The work they're doing here in the Atlanta area with the sustainable agriculture, golden growers, Habesha Works, and so forth. Also, to the Kashi project that is going on in Ghana. The buildings are up and so forth. So go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group, the land for environmental development of group economics. Land for the environmental development of group economics, the Ledge Group. And of course, these brothers and sisters deal in the four areas of human existence: food, water, clothing, and shelter, of providing for it. They have 12 projects that are active at this time in 6 countries on the continent, and 172 employees and over 260 members. They need more members. You know it. Check them out. Go to theledgegroup.com and check it out for yourself. Theledgegroup.com. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics. As we like to say, family-centered economics. Their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com/ULU. And the name of the program is Dare to Win. Had a good program last night from 9 to 10 at Us Lifting Us. And keep this number, because you can call in and listen, or you can call in and give comments or questions or concerns at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar in the West End of here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy, right across the street from the Soul Veg, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Give them a call at 404-444-1635, 404-444-1635. They have delicious smoothies and vitality drinks and pastries, and all kinds of good stuff at Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia is setting up right there in the main area in the Greenbrier Mall. She moved her store, bigger store. Let's give sister a call at 404-346-3263. So if you're in the Atlanta area and there's a book, but she has postcards, greeting cards, figurines, T-shirts, you name it, at the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall at 404-346-3263. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, on Main Street in Lithonia. Give my good brother Gazimde Ajamu a call at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. So if you're in Lithonia, that is east of here of Atlanta, check out my good brother. He has a coffee bar now. You can get that delicious Cameroon Boyo, which is my favorite, and my good friend, Taishi's favorite. So it's good coffee, and you should check it out. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Sanjay. That's right, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia and her crew are doing great work with our young people and our people, period, in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Go online to Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti.org, and check it out. And if you go online, believe me, you'll say, yes, I support this, and find ways to, you can do whatever you can to support it. All right? Sanjay-Haiti. Okay. What am I looking for here? I'm always looking for something. Akaban Institute, Baba Baruti and Mama Ya Baruti, I can't say it enough, what outstanding work that they're doing. And they have a program coming up very shortly. And but if you want to give, please do support them. I give the address out of Akaban Institute at the P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Akaban Institute. Make your check or money order out to Akaban Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Or you can use Cash App and PayPal. If you use Cash App, if it's Cash App, use the dollar sign, YAM, the letter M, Baruti, BARUTI, and you can make those payments to Akaban for the benefit of our children. Of course, they have a couple of things that are going to be happening on the 6th, Saturday, February 6th. That's next Saturday. The quarterly men's meeting. Baba Rudy will be talking about developing an effective rites of passage program. The cost of the program is $20 on Zoom, $20 for warriors, and $10 for young men. And it's very important. And, of course, you include in pertinent information, men's quarterly meeting, your name, the email, your email address to where they can send a streaming link. And that is from noon to 3 p.m. And then from 4 to 6 p.m., Inia Baruti, Mama Ya, she will have her meeting, women's quarterly meeting. And the theme is When a Woman Heals. When a Woman Heals. And once again, the same thing applies. Include the information, quarterly sister circle, your name, the email address where you can send the link. So you can, and that's $10 for adults and $5 for young people. Okay, that's next week, Saturday. The Inye Sasim is available, brothers and sisters. Go to akabinhouse.org. The Inye Sasim, Volume 2, which I'm about to read from, akabinhouse.org. And then the 13th Annual, that's next week, Friday. Next week, Friday on Zoom from 1 to 3 p.m. on Zoom. This is a great thing, brothers and sisters. If you have the time to go on your Zoom from next week, Friday, from 1 to 3, check out these presentations. Check out the displays that they have, how intricate things are. They do an outstanding job. These are the Metro Atlanta American African Independent School System. Metro Atlanta American African Independent School System on Zoom. Here's the number. Please take it down. 807-211-2759. 207-211-2759. And the password, Pearl, P-E-A-R-L. Password is Pearl, P-E-A-R-L. If you want any more information, you can call this number for more information at 404-344-2777. That's 404-344-2777. All right. What else do I got? Oh, yeah. I got to talk about ASCAC. ASCAC tomorrow. Yeah, I'm part of the program. I'm a member of ASCAC. ASCAC Southern Regional Meeting tomorrow. Dr. Mario Beatty, Dr. Delethia Watkins, Mario's wife, and Dr. Greg Kamathi Carr, and Dr. Catherine Adams. Dr. Bobby Daniels will also be presenting. There's a number of people who are going to be presenting. Dr. Bob Goldman, Jerome Boykin, just the Morehouse College and Keflin College students. Listen, if you want to check out ASCAC this evening, starting at 5, okay, here's what you do. Click to register, https://, then put in tinyurl.com. Once again, that's tinyurl.com/ ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, that is ASCAC, South Registration. And that information, you'll receive the conference Zoom link when you register. Okay? And, of course, here are some of the programs starting, like I said, this evening. And there's a drum call, then a libation by me, and a welcome by our beautiful sister, Sister Reba Kelsey, Dr. Kelsey's daughter. She's great. Ancestral tribute. There's going to be an ancestral tribute to Lester Velt Middleton, who you know I read, and I encourage you to go online to check out his interviews with our historical warrior scholar ancestors. Dr. Asa Hilliard, Nana Bofor, Queen Nzinga Radabishi Haru, the leader of ASCAC for many years, and then Larry Obadeli Williams, Bubba Obadeli Williams from here in Atlanta, and many of these people. Bob Gorman will be talking about Lester Velt Middleton, and Baraki Middleton, maybe a relative, Ernestine Middleton. This is going to be great. That is tonight. Dr. Richardson, we talk about Asa Hilliard. Brother Boykin on Jerome, we talk about Sister Nzinga. And Kenyatta Bush, we'll be talking about Baba Obadeli Williams. And then there will be addressed by the president of ASCAC, Dr. Mario Beatty. And then tomorrow, the drum call, and once again, libation, and a welcome by the sister. And Dr. Bobby Daniels, I'm looking forward to this. A Most Outrageous Incendiary Publication, David Walker's Appeal in Georgia and South Carolina. You know they didn't want that to happen. So that's going to be interesting conversation. And then the Keflin University students out of South Carolina, it'll be cultural meaning, making students' oral history projects cultural meaning. Okay, and then Sister Catherine, defining high stories, conducting and preserving oral histories in African studies. And then Sister Ridge, Margaret Ridge, women, magic, and medicine in ancient Kemet. And then in the plenary, Sister Valethia, Mario Beatty's wife, Hawkins, be doing a presentation. And then the Morehouse students transformation under an African studies curriculum. You know that's what we need. And the Black material health crises and return to Black midwifery. Yeah. And then a keynote address, the ASCAC study group model, a way of companions. And that is going to be done by our good brother, Dr. Greg Kamathi Carr, at the end of the program. And then there's a study panel on Sunday morning, and then a conference closing and some regional wrap up on Sunday. But tonight and tomorrow, ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, and this is the Southern region. There will be in March, and I'll have give you more on that because I'm a member of ASCAC. Love ASCAC. Love it. It's part of my conscious raising or my African-centeredness. And let me see what else I want to give you. There's something else. Okay. I'll give you that note. Okay, the note. Well, we're ready to go. Let me read the NYA Say Sam then so we can get started on what we're going to be talking about today, you know. January 28th. The existence of a people can be measured by the extent to which they have confidence in themselves as a people and to which their national memory is intact. Thus, to annihilate a people's cultural reference point, that is, national memory, spirituality, social and political acumen, ancestral icons, and so on, is to kill the people mentally and to subjugate them to dependency upon the killer who substitute his culture for the culture of the victim. This is an act of menticide, the byproducts of being incendiary, fratricide, and in the long term, genocide. Harold Pates. For warriors, being conscious means to be historically and historically aware of their people's present condition and future possibilities. In context of our personal and natural power, consciousness is a state of mind wherein we know who we are, what we are up against, and what needs to be done to overcome any and every obstacle separating us from where we are now and a permanent, empowered, self-directed, and self-defined sovereignty. However, the term consciousness in itself is being less and less useful as a descriptive, of uncompromised warriors' minds because it, like locks in community, have become more and more watered down due to the conscious and unconscious efforts of those who want to make Urugu's interpretation of reality into African way and vice versa. Indeed, increasingly more warriors are choosing to use the word centered to describe the warrior state of mind as simply defined above. We are centered. We are African-centered. Affirm, I do everything in my power to reverse the menticide wherein has we that any African in need who is determined to do likewise. Affirm, I do everything in my power to reverse the menticide wherein as well as that of any African in need of is who is determined to do likewise. January 29th. The warrior's behavior toward other like-minded warriors ought to be looked upon as a light shining upon the hill for all to see. Those brothers and sisters who have yet or will not come into any realm of consciousness ought to look at and at least see and admire our collective discipline. Ashe, brother's keeper. Arizinha, that is South Africa. South Africa, the word for South Africa, not South Africa. It is Azinia. The Azinian ancestors taught us that good behavior must come from the top. Our leadership must be visible one, exemplifying the best of African manhood and womanhood and warriorhood. It must be one which constantly demonstrates good character and projects it as our ideal as a people. They must be institution builders, the highest reputation, because people without good character cannot build institutions with good character. Only good character can provide an adequate model of good character for the warrior to follow. Like builds like, and our definition of good character must be broad in terms of positive human qualities. If only limited to one or two, there will always be loopholes for deceivers who want credit for what they are not. For example, we must still be careful at the individual level in terms of who we define as men and women based on non-contradictory public and private lives. For menticide can also be contradictory. To ignore this would leave us agreeing with an overtly simplistic, out of the cultural context interpretation of that individual. Some of them can also keep their word, but clearly they do not fit an African definition of warriorhood. So do not get twisted up in their other equally debased confusion
as they will surely try to use our ancestors against us by only pointing out that their adherence to only one non-contradictory variable. For the true measure of a man or woman has to be more, much, much more than simply keeping one's word. Affirm, I am a shining example of African warriorhood. Affirm, I am a shining example of African warriorhood. January 30th. An economy exists prior to money. There were economies in the world before money was invented. We don't even have to have money to have an economic system. So ultimately, when we study economic systems, we recognize that the economic system at its base refers to the nature of the relationship between people. Repeat. Economic system at its base refers to the nature of the relationship between people. It's the systematic way people choose to relate to one another that makes an economic system, not money. When we lack a systematic way of relating to each other, then we can have money and still be poor, have money and be robbed, which is what we are. Dr. Amos Wilson. What happens to the quality of life and relationships in a community when borrowed things are either returned in worse shape or not returned at all? What happens to loyalty when promises, whatever form, are not kept? Promises broken and kept speak to character, negatively and positively, respectfully. When the former occurs on the front line, the disappointment is so much more deeper and damaging because we are few and we claim greater accountability to Ma'at and each other. It can cause a warrior to wonder about the purpose of their nation-building work if others' personal faults remain uncorrected. Even worse, if we judge the degree to which we are personally required to fulfill our promises to each other, warriors by degree to which they can retaliate against us for broken promises, we are not acting in Ma'at, and it speaks to the weakness of our character. If we cannot keep the promises that we make to each other as we work the front lines together, then it will not be possible for us to win these larger battles we wage against enemies, which will require an unqualified unity. Affirm, I operate with an awareness that we are our currency. Affirm, I operate with an awareness that we are our currency. The Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Which is interesting because I have a piece I'm going to play. Because pretty much around what we're going to be talking about today, which is Caucasian or European immigration around the world, which of course is designed as a form of genocide to supplant us. Yeah. But when I just read about how a society is, that's why Western society can never claim a moral position, particularly the United States and Britain, all of them, because they are diseased socially. Check this out.
Between the USA and the UK, the two most sophisticated, advanced civilizations, there are 27 million persons addicted to drugs. There are 89 million people addicted to alcohol. There are 106 million persons addicted to cigarette smoking. 21 million of those die every year from diseases related to their addiction to cigarette smoking. 24 million women prostitute themselves legally with licenses. 8 murders or homicides are committed every 19 minutes. And 2 rapes are committed every 7 minutes. And there are 3 robberies every 59 seconds. There are 257,000 children that are legally or illegally aborted. That is, 257,000 children are killed in the womb by license. 21 million children are born every year out of wedlock who do not know their mothers and fathers, or who do not know whom they are fathered by. 2.8 million suicides every year of human beings who find no reason to live. 275,000 persons are locked up in their prison industrial complexes. And today, the prisons are built as industries. They're no longer built simply to house and to reform criminals. They are built as industries, and major conglomerates compete with one another for the contracts to build and to administrate these prison complexes, because they have found that the labor from prisoners are just like the labor in South America or India and other places. They can have people locked up for 20 years, 30 years, or for life, and have them to work for 53 cents an hour. So it makes sense to build prisons, and it makes sense to give people life in prison. These statistics are shocking. They are depressing, and they are evident themselves that such societies do not qualify to be the models or the champions for the source of bringing peace to the world. With these kinds of social problems inside of their own boundaries, inside of their own governments, in their own institutions, how can they bring peace to the world? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't make sense, but it's happening. It's happening. It's happening all over. You know, this society, and that was just talking about United Snakes and Britain. You know, they're one and the same. I don't know how you want to put it. They're one and the same. The United Snakes and Britain are one and the same. I'm going to go over some good information, but first I want to quickly talk about Cicely Tyson. Sister Cicely Tyson made her transition last night. Ironically, I watched, and I said this the other day, if you would, you know, that I watch CBS News, because in the morning news, the other shows, I don't, especially like ABC, I used to try to watch them, but they have too much fluff, and because they're owned by Disney. But so they're more news features on CBS, I believe. And I'm not crazy at all about Gayle King, but she did an interview with Cicely Tyson last week. Last week, she did an interview with Cicely Tyson last week at the Abyssinian Baptist Church in New York, which is a church that Cicely Tyson went to. She's 96 years old, and she was talking about still doing work. Still doing work. I remember the series East Side, West Side. It was a television series back in the late 50s, early 60s, East Side, West Side. And she was on it. She was on the first American African people on a television program. And I know Denise Nicholas of Star Trek came later, you know. And one thing that, here's something you may not know, and if you go to Google and so forth, her first cousin, Cicely Tyson's first cousin, you probably hear this now, is Minister Louis Farrakhan. It's Minister Louis Farrakhan. Of course, you know that she was married for some time to Miles Davis from 81 to 89. She was married to Miles Davis. You know, she played in so many great movies. Sounder, which she won an Academy Award. The autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, you know. Diary of a Mad Black Woman, some Tyler Perry, The Help, How to Get Away with Murder. She was on that series with Davis, Viola Davis. She was her mother. She was her mother in that series, you know. But just an outstanding actress, just a great actress, you know. Check out Hoolim. Now, that she portrays a real sister who, at the time in Harlem with Bumpy Johnson. Hoodlum. So there's just so much. What a great life. What a great career. What a beautiful woman.
And she just came out with a book. She's on the cover of the book, Ball Headed. You know, talking about her essence. It's just beautiful. Just beautiful. You know. Yeah. Yeah, it's just great. And all the credits and so forth. So if you can get a chance to go on. Because like I said, she just passed. And so they said what Wikipedia is being heavily edited because of her recent passing. So they're going to be putting more stuff into it and so forth. But like I said, admire and respect Sister Cicely Tyson. No doubt. No doubt. Then we would thank her for her presenting us. And she always played dignified roles. She always played dignified roles. So, my good sister in Botswana sent me this piece through WhatsApp, and I felt it was definitely something that I wanted to bring to the attention. I have done this before, but this is most recent, and it's ongoing, and bringing it to the attention of our people. You know, when we say that the European is practicing genocide on us. The European is causing us to have menticide. The European is causing us to do, and you know, and I know there's some of us who blame us, you know, blaming the victim. I know some people like that. Some people who like to believe that we're our own worst enemies, which of course is a statement I detest. And if I hear somebody say it, I don't give a damn. Out of due respect, of course, he might be an elder. And I do respect, you know. Oh, I apologize for the East Side, West Side. That was in the early 60s, 63 to 64. Yeah. East Side, West Side with George C. Scott. But she was a regular on the series. She became the first American African to star in a TV drama when she starred in the series East Side, West Side. See? And then Denise Nicholas with Star Trek. You know, I like to be, if you know me, you know, I try to be most correct as I can be. Number one, because I don't give you my opinion. My opinion is profane. It is deeply profane. So what I give you is based on the scholarly research by our scholars, our historians, our elders and our ancestors. Information that will help liberate you, putting something on your mind, because we are at war for the minds of our people. The Whitening of South Africa Project. Caucasianizing South Africa. As I stated earlier, that South Africa, if you listen to the program, the Caucasians who came into South Africa hundreds of years ago are still controlling and running South Africa. The Dutch, the Boers, the British are still controlling South Africa. The Germans are still controlling Namibia, or Southwest Africa, as they called it then. Azania, that is the name of South Africa, Azania. They are still controlling, because if you control the weapons, the military, and you control the money, you in control. I don't give a damn who you have as president. I don't give a damn how your electoral process is, or your legislative process is, or any judicial process. I don't give a damn what kind of process you got. If I control the military and I control the money, I'm in control. And Caucasians are in control. Do you know that there is a secret project backed with huge funds and a parallel and a parallel of unofficial diplomatic missions from South Africa that is doing an intensive work in Eastern Europe countries in order to attract them to settle in South Africa? The project team goes to many Eastern European countries to encourage Caucasian immigration to South Africa in order to raise the Caucasian population of South Africa to 25% by half of this century, by 2050. This project is similar to the one in Brazil, Argentina, Chile, in the late 1800s and the 19th century, giving incentives to poor European farmers to settle and diminish the African indigenous populations. According to Caucasian South African calculation, once the European or Caucasian population would reach 25%, they could regain political control and rule South Africa in a similar way, like Brazil, like the Caucasians in Brazil. There are more Africans in Brazil than any country except Nigeria. Many more Africans in Brazil than in the United States. You may not have heard about that, but demographic wars are going on right now in Africa. The whitening of Africa. There are many other countries that Europeans felt it was necessary for them to go in and kind of take over. When these countries were colonized by Europeans, whether they're Spanish, whether they're Portuguese, whether they're Germans, Italians, or French, or whatever the hell they are, they is Caucasians. They are Europeans, and they have a like-mindedness. And one of that like-mindedness is nobody but us. We subjugate everybody else. When we come into a place and claim it in the name of whatever, what we are saying, I don't give a damn what you say. I don't care how long you've been here. I don't give a damn what your traditions, your language, your religion. I don't give a damn about nothing. I am supplanting you. I am taking your land and I'm subjugating you. And if you don't go along with it, I'm going to kill your ass. I know I'm being crass, but that's the deal, because that's what they did. Ain't no damn nice way to put this. My good friend Keith Acey out of Cleveland, Ohio, sent this some time ago, last year. I've heard of these atrocities before. They were one on the periphery of my awareness. Knowledge is a mother. You're right, man. It is a mother. I owe it to my ancestors now to dig deeper and learn their story. Damn, this hurts his soul. That's what he says. It is not paranoia when they really are out to get you. No, it's not. No, Brother Keith, and no brothers and sisters. It is not paranoia. They are out to get us. They want to eliminate us off the planet. I know you say that's going to be impossible. Let me say this to you. Ain't nothing impossible. And particularly when we are so fragmented. When we don't understand, we could liberate ourselves at this very moment. At this very moment. But all of us agreeing that we're going to change our minds and work towards functional unity for African people. At this very moment. This is the reason why there are no American African players. Excuse me. This is the reason why there are no Argentinian African players on the Argentinian soccer team. I watched the Argentinian and Iceland match today and wonder why there are no African players in Argentina or other Southern South American teams when other South American teams did have Africans and biracial players. I remember a conversation I had last year, and this gentleman, Michael, talked about the conversation. It was while I was on a cruise from Florida to the Grand Caymans in the Caribbean.
Between the Argentinian doctor and myself, who had walked up to me during lunch one day and struck up a conversation with me, there was no hiding the intention. We had bonded, much to the chagrin of three other Argentinian friends. On the deck of the ship that day, she kept going on about how she loves African men and looks forward to traveling so she can meet them. I asked her, don't you have African people in Argentina? She said, with a matter-of-fact candor, no. Long time ago, after they were captives, we killed them all. I was taken back. She smiled and continued, very sad. I'm ashamed of my people. It was very systematic, though. Very well thought out. First, they forced most of the men to fight for Argentina against Paraguay. They knowingly sent them into battles that were poorly planned so that the Paraguay army will do to them what they couldn't themselves do. Kill the blacks. Kill the Africans. Most of them died there. The remaining of them were forced to live in the province where there was plague, a disease that government refused to curb so that it can also do to them what they couldn't do. Kill the Africans. They refused to set up hospitals, clinics, adequate shelter, food outlets, nothing. They created the best environment for disease to thrive. It killed the rest of the men that had survived the war. The darker you are, the higher the chances that you will send you to the place to live or war to die. The lighter skinned women were then forced to sleep with Caucasian men, Argentinian Caucasian men, so that their children are biracial. Then the children would then be forced, as they grew older, to sleep with Caucasian men so that the blackness of their skin would become whiter and whiter until there were no longer any visible African people. It was so bad that Africans fled to Chile and Peru and Bolivia and Brazil and even Paraguay, where they were better treated, even though not as well as they should be treated as human beings, deservingly full equality. At least those ones who did not want to kill them and accept them and protect them in the means of livelihood. As a matter of fact, in Chile, there was a city called Arica, where African people were so accepted and respected in the 1700s, two African freedmen, one called Anzire, was elected mayors. But the Caucasian colonial masters of Spain came 6 months later and nullified the elections. They were afraid of other cities giving African people too many rights. But the Africans who had found occurrence did not complain. They sent word to others to flee Argentina and come join them. After all, what was canceled elections compared to certain death? Then she went silent, as though trying to replay the magnitude of the crime in her own mind. Then she said in a somber tone, in order to drive it home to me, the ones the Argentinians did not kill, though, war or disease and rape and impregnate, fled the country, and ultimately we got rid of the Africans. We got rid of them. I listened in rising sorrow. She continued academically. So although they abolished slavery in 1850 in Argentina, it continued on to 1853. After that, the main preoccupation of the leaders was to how to get rid of these Africans and their descendants. Our president, who ruled us from 1863 to 1874, Domingo San Martino, wrote in his diary in 1848, this was long before he became president and captivity ended in the United States. 4 million Africans, and within 20 years will be 8 million. What is to be done with such Africans hated by the Caucasians? It shows that he was already thinking of how to eliminate African people before he became president. And when he became president, he succeeded. Didn't the world say anything? No. They ignored it. I'm sure most of them wanted to do the same thing, but they failed. At the time, they admired them. I remember when I will go to Brazil as a child, my father's friend would say in disgust as he looked at the African Brazilians or the Brazilian Africans, we should have had the guts to finish them off, all of them, make Brazil Caucasian like Argentina. And the Europeans, she laughed. It's an open secret, just like King Leopold and his genocide in the Congo. No one talks about it, but they know about it. At least the older ones do. The younger ones, not so much. Why do you think all Nazis run to Argentina after the Second World War? And there's a group of Confederates after the Civil War was lost. They went to Argentina, about 10 to 20,000 of them. And they still hold a celebration with the Confederate flag and so forth and dress in Confederate wear in Argentina. I was silent, she continued, because it was perfect place for most evil races in history to live. Then she looked out to the infinity of the blue sea around the ship and sighed audibly when she continued. Sadly, to some extent, it is still welcoming and accommodating a racial hatred. We took the tango. We took the tango from the African and made it our own. In Argentina, one person will tell you the true history of that dance. They don't want to associate it with Africa. In fact, if you ask them about African people, they will tell you that there have never been African people in Argentina. They teach them that in schools. They rewrite the history. They make it all Caucasian. And as I say, it is all underneath the surface. They never come out and say we hate African people. Argentina's only for Caucasians or anything like that. They just fixed the country to only be for Caucasian people. I looked at her friends, Argentinians like her, who were lounging on the chairs on the deck, clad in their tiny bikinis, drinking pina coladas and smiling. She followed my gaze and we turned and then returned to me. Don't be fooled by all those smiles. Scratch the surface and you'll see that they all want is for you to disappear. Brothers and sisters, they all want us to disappear. Go to YouTube, Cosmic Slop, Funkadelic. Cosmic Slop. Drop that down. Go to YouTube, Cosmic Slop. George Clinton and Funkadelic. It's an hour and a half venue at each one asking about a half hour. The first one is the Space Traders. Talks about, this is hypothetical. This is Derek Bell's written piece. If extraterrestrial got a hold of somebody in the U.S. and they got a hold of, in some place, an extraterrestrial got a hold of some people on the planet. And this happened to be the U.S. And they wanted to do some trading. They would clean up the atmosphere. They would turn the Statue of Liberty into pure gold. They would eliminate all debt and so forth. The only thing they wanted was people who had a high melanin content. There was a vote taken, a plebiscite, a vote taken by the people. Well, of course, Caucasians outnumber us. Robert Guillaume is one of the people. It's a great piece. And then there's another piece dealing with Condomblé. And then there's another piece that deals with the fears that many of our people have. Brothers and sisters, we're going to take a break. And when we come back from that break, you know, I'll talk about more of countries that try to eliminate us. And I'm saying this to say, do you think this is not happening now? This continues to happen. Thank you, Sister Susumin. I really appreciate that. She's listening from Botswana. And I really appreciate that. And I know that this is a very serious subject on the continent.
It's a serious subject everywhere for us because Europeans, who are our mortal enemy, as they die off, I keep saying to you, they are suffering from negative population growth. For every two that die, only one is born. Their population is so much older. On average, damn near 40 years. They're not having kids. Why do you think you see, I can't speak about Botswana, never been there. Love to go. But I don't know if they have commercials on Botswanian TV with Caucasians and sisters and showing their offspring. That's what they have here, isn't it? You see it all the time. Constant. Interracial commercials and offspring. What is it saying? So we'll be right back. You stay with us. This is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back for more of this discussion. And you can join that discussion by dialing 215-490-9832. We'll be right back. Thank you.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to get right back to the discussion. And I'm going to read Sister Susumi. Text me this just recently, so I'm definitely it's part of the good conversation that we're having today, or the sad conversation.
Oops, the announcement from government that this country was now breaking away from the old colonial British education. They are now going to team up with the Germans to set up their new educational system. So nothing has changed and nothing will change. The Nazis and the Caucasian terrorists assaulting is intensifying. And yes, more misogynistic on TV. There's more misogyny on TV and in reality in the country. This is a war that continues to be imposed on us. Yes, it is, my sister. Thank you, Sister Susumi. I really appreciate that. And it is. We are at war. We are at war. Our very existence is at stake. The main thing that we, now I'm going to say this and I'm going to hit these article from Atlanta Black Star on five nations that imported Europeans to whiten the population. And that was back in 2014 that they submitted this article. Is that the only thing that is going to save us is Pan-Africanism, a real Pan-Africanism, and unity, functional unity for African people. It is only kicking everybody's ass off the continent, even the Negroes, the neocolonialists, the despots, the collaborators, kicking their ass off. And only people on the continent are sincere, committed Africans to building that continent for the benefit of African people and people of goodwill. Taking care of that shit that's going on in the north with them so-called Arabs, checking that. The continent is ours. Okay, I understand. The whole world is that. No, yeah, I understand that. We're the first people. Yes, I understand. But one thing that we can lay claim to, one thing that we can say to the world, this is ours, is the continent of Africa. And that's what we must do. After the Atlantic captivity was officially abolished toward the end of the 19th century, many Caucasians felt threatened and feared Africans, free Africans, would become dominant in their societies. The elite spent a great deal of time mulling over how best to solve the so-called Negro problem. A population solution that emerged during this period was the ideology of racial whitening or whitening. Supporters of whitening ideology believed that if superior Caucasian population was encouraged to mix with an inferior African population, Africans would advance culturally and genetically and even disappear totally within several generations. Some also believed that an influx of immigrants from Europe would be necessary to successfully carry out this process. Although both ideologies were driven by racism, European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, whitening was in contrast to some countries that opt for segregation rather than miscegenation, ultimately outlawing the mixing of the so-called cultures. This, however, was just a different means to the same end, as these nations also imported more Europeans while slaughtering and oppressing African populations. The first one up is Brazil. Brazil's whitening ideology gained support from two pseudoscience racist beliefs that they were prominent during that time. One being social Darwinism, which applied Darwin's theory of natural selection to a society or culture. And the other being Arianism, the belief that the Caucasian race, was superior to all other cultures. By combining these two ideologies, a certain portion of the Brazilian population elite believed from roughly 1800 to today that the nation would be whitened and thus improved if Caucasians were encouraged to mate with Africans. To further ensure that Brazil became Caucasian, and you can look at another place, the Dominican Republic, which shares the island with Haiti. And only problem, of course, is that the island of Haiti is the problem. And that's another story. A series of laws were passed prohibiting the immigration of African people to the country. In 1945, the Brazilian government issued a decree favoring the enhancement and the entrance of Europeans in the country. In the admission of immigrants, the need to preserve and develop the ethnic composition of the population, the more convenient features of European ancestors shall be considered.
because Brazil's racist miscegenation agenda, lighter skin became valued among, I've been to Brazil, I've been there, and yes, it is deep. Brazilians of African heritage, the darker skinned individuals sought lighter skinned partners, since the surest way to gain upper mobility is to possess whiter skin than your parents. Hate this. I really do. Cuba. At the dawn of the 20th century, Cuban Africans enthusiastically joined the struggle for independence against Spain in hopes of building a nation based on racial democracy. However, the U.S. military present in Cuba from 1898 to 1902 and again from 1906 to 1908 propped up and defended a racist ruling class who pursued policies that actively sought the whitening of the nation. That's why when Fidel Castro did what he did, and then when he died, the Caucasian Cubans in Florida. That's why I have no respect. I hate their ass. Hell with them damn Cubans. And you see them on TV, you know, because there are many of them. And they'll say they're Cuban. The power elites promoted interracial marriages, and the Cuban government created immigration laws that invested more than $1 million into recruiting Europeans, mostly from Spain, into Cuba in order to whiten the state, all while excluding Africans from every aspect of national life. A ban on non-Caucasians immigration was also implemented. Despite massive investments in European DNA, many of the immigrants did not stay in Cuba and came solely for the sugar investment and the sugar harvest, returning to their homes during the off-season, although some 780 Spaniards migrated between 1902 and 1931, only 250,000 stayed. By the end, see, they came and took some of that sugar, some of that money. By the end of the 1920s, as a national policy had effectively failed. It did, however, cause lasting damage by shifting the demographics of Cuba and solidifying the social and economic marginalization of African Cubans still today, even under Fidel, even under his brother, even under the social, it's still today. When I went to Cuba and visited even the school, the School of Medicine, most of the people in charge of it are the Caucasian looking Cubans. Most of the people in charge of it. And most of the people in charge of government entities and so forth. Just like when we went there, that little abbreviated thing, that little cruise to Cuba. The only thing we did was get off the boat and visit some sites, take some pictures, and then go to a government for some cigars and some rum. And ironically, everybody, at least in that place, I can't speak to all others, I've never been to all the others, but in that place, everybody was a more Caucasian looking Cuban. The people who are on the outside trying to say, hey, listen, they don't, you know, you can buy, see, we're African Cubans. Once again, exclusion. Jamaica. After the abolition of captivity in Jamaica, August 1st of 1834, many owners feared an impending shortage of labor. Apparently, the newly freed and well-experienced Africans on the island were not good candidates for a paid labor force. Consequently, the former captive owners sought new measures in an effort to solve this problem. One solution was the establishment of a European settlement by Lord Seaford, then owner of Montpelier Estate and Settlerwood Pen, which were located in Westmoreland in the parish of St. James. More than 1,000 Germans were sought and brought to Jamaica with the promise of being granted housing, land, and employment. The Caucasian migration never amounted to too much because mixing with African populations and migration to the U.S. depleted much of its population. Moreover, a century of inbreeding had degenerative effect on what's left of the population. However, many Jamaicans in Seaford Town and Germantown in the trial carry heavy European features such as blue eyes, blonde hair, freckles, white skin as a result of the German genetic influence. Man, I should find out from Jamaican. If any Jamaicans out there, give us a call. Talk to us about this. If you know this, South Africa, Azania. The apartheid system was designed to maintain Caucasian domination in South Africa. The associated immigration laws implemented during Caucasian rule reflected that ideology. However, the groundwork was laid well before the apartheid system was officially put in place. In 1820, the British authorities persuaded about 50,000 middle-class British immigrants to leave Great Britain and settle on tracts of land that were being violently disputed by the Zulus and the Boers. The idea was that they were supposed to provide a buffer zone, but the plan was unsuccessful because within 3 years, almost half of the settlers had retreated to the towns to pursue the kind of jobs that they had in Britain. In 1870 onward, there was a large-scale immigration to South Africa following the discovery of gold and diamonds. In the Transvaal, the site of the gold discoveries, the Caucasian population expanded eightfold. In 1848, while European South Africa was facing food and housing shortages, rampant inflation and unemployment, the government ramped up state-assisted immigration from Europe, in which Prime Minister Smoot said was an effort to ensure South Africa's economic and industrial expansion and to ensure the maintenance of a Western civilization. Following the implementation of apartheid regime's immigrant policy, Europeans, primarily from Britain, arrived at three times the rate as they previously did. Meanwhile, native Africans were being murdered and forcibly removed from their land, and immigration laws were being used to arrest those who were found in Caucasian designated areas for more than 72 hours. Although Europeans declared South Africa as white man's country during apartheid, immigrants from Taiwan, South Korea, and Japan were considered honorary whites. I'll read that again. Immigrants from Taiwan, South Korea, and Japan were considered honorary whites in the country. They were granted the same privileges as Caucasian people for the sake of maintaining diplomatic relationships with their respective nations. And here's the last nation. Australia. Australia. Australia's natives have been... Australia's natives have been victims of oppression in many ways for various reasons for over 200 years. Their land had been taken over by Europeans, and later on they were forced to assimilate into their society. A.L. Neville, the chief protector of Aborigines from 1950 to 1940, inspired by the same eugenics propaganda that informed the, I can't even pronounce that word in Latin America, basically the Blanco trying to, you know, turn them white, attempted to use miscegenation to breed the Africanness out of the indigenous population. Following the Second World War, authorities began a slow shift away from biological assimilation to one of cultural assimilation. From 1869 until well into the 1970s, over 100 years, thousands of indigenous children under 12 years of age were removed from their families to be absorbed into the Caucasian community. I repeat, thousands of indigenous children were removed, 12 years of age and older, were removed from their families and absorbed into the Caucasian community. To reinforce attempts to whiten Australia, the Australian government's first act was to pass the Immigration Restrictive Act, often referred to as White Australia's policy. This effectively banned non-white immigration for 50 years and offered money and jobs to immigrants from Europe. When the European invasion began in 1788, Australia's population, their indigenous population, was about 750,000. By 1933, the population fell to its lowest level. By 2014, more than 20 million people live on the continent. But the indigenous population made up just 2%, or about 563,000. Yeah. Takeover. Yeah. If you want to get on this conversation, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You know, the removal of Africans from their land. Brother Sean, how you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing good, man. I was taking some notes on what you were saying about these countries. You were saying about Argentina and stuff, you know.
Right.
It's like when we talk about the birth rates in Europe, right? They turn the South, the so-called global South, you know what I'm saying? That's another like little term that people throw around. They're trying to throw that into a fallback plan, man. It's like Argentina is like the South, you know, is the South of the South, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. When you say the Confederates went
right
down there, that's like
yes,
the South.
That's right. That's right. The Confederate, when they lost the war, instead of being subjugated, instead of being in that Southern environment and not wanting to go to the North, they just packed up and moved to Argentina, because already in place in Argentina was a removal of Africans.
It's like, you know, I read about that, about Argentina before. Black people, if you identify with Africa, that's the only thing that we can go on. Now, my thing is that as someone who's born outside of Africa, I can't really have too much sway. Although, I mean, I can't imagine myself like moving back and like all of a sudden, like somehow just through dint of just like, you know, coming up and like not like acknowledging the people who are already there. That'd be the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to absorb myself in whatever I become. Has to be infused by that which is around. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but see, you know, that's what must happen. There must be an integration of Africans and the diaspora. Africans on the continent, Africans in the diaspora. There must be a situation where we understand, as Africans on the continent and Africans in the diaspora, are coming there to bring whatever is good that they want to bring, and whatever is there already good, and then melt that. Not like what we did in Liberia. You know, we went to Liberia with an attitude where we American Africans, and we better than y'all. Our skin is lighter, and we've been involved with Europeans for hundreds of years, and so we better than y'all. And then the Africans,
which is a tragedy, because I mean that really could have like set off some really good stuff. Only on like a practicality point of like black people going to Africa and Liberia being a point. The black people who came from America really did the native people dirty, man. And when that happened, they let Firestone come through.
Right.
And really just like that began the whole.
Right.
I mean, it's good to critique, especially this is people that, you know, people who are in America from the various points of Africa. You know what I'm saying? We are literally mixed together. We can see another black people if we're driving around from another state, and they could literally be like sixth or seventh cousins. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We are literally possibly in a lot of ways all related in a very broad way. Because even people from like the Congo and people from like Senegal, you know, people move around. We are literally to a high degree of confidence relatively related to each other. You know what I'm saying? A good chance of us are. So when we look at each other, when we want to be angry and kill each other, we we are all to, I mean, like, you know, not too close of cousins, but you never know. I mean, it's like we are all easily seventh, eighth, ninth cousins of one another. You know what I'm saying?
No, we are. And the problem, of course, is that we have been trained not to see ourselves as that. You know, Europeans promote individualism. Individualism is a European Caucasian desire. I'm an individual, it's me. I think, therefore, I am. You know, African people have always been collective. Because we are, therefore, I am. Ubuntu, we come together. That is ours, an association of being collective. European, their whole thing is, I'm getting mine. Their whole thing is, might makes right. You know, Africa's ideal is right makes right, and you're held to standards of righteousness. But, you know, like I played that piece, I believe you, did you hear it on what happens here in the United States and in Europe, all the dysfunction, all the disease, all the killings, all the murders, all the suicides. This is a wretched ass society. You know, I understand that in some individuals' circumstance and in their lives, it's all good. They ain't worried about nothing. Even during this pandemic, you know, they're doing fine. They may even have they may feel even more secure because they got the shot. I don't know, you know, but they're doing well, and they can give less than a rat's ass about anybody else. Because as long as they're getting theirs, it's all good. In fact, what they say to you, if you ain't getting yours, it's your fault. Because it's there to get. And of course, we all know that's ludicrous and crazy, because not even Caucasians are getting theirs. So you know we ain't getting ours. Because it's only designed to give you the illusion of inclusion. It makes you think because a few black faces in high places that everything is all good, you know, and now they're going to give us some props about the election and how Biden got in and the work that was done here in Georgia by Stacey Abrams and Black Votes Matter and so forth, that it's all good. It ain't about nothing. There's still, our situation will continue to deteriorate. Will continue to get worse, because that is the design. There, I mean, when you talk about displacement and genocide and menticide, it's real. This is not imaginary. It's not something for the future. It's happening at this moment. It is happening right now. And of course, we continue to hope and pray and wish and march. And it is not just America. This is a global, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon. I just read to you about Australia. There's 20 million people on Australia, and only the indigenous people, the original people, the people they encountered, the people they murdered. I don't know. There's another movie you can probably get to see that, Quigley Down Under. Quigley Down Under, Tom Selleck, and where he was hired to kill Aboriginal people, just to kill. They would herd them off into an area with their horses, and the Europeans would just force them to go off a cliff and kill them, just like they did us. Look at after captivity, the Devil's Punch Bowl in Natchez, Mississippi, where they corralled us into an area of land. And forced us to just sit, lay there and die when we couldn't escape. We're dealing with an evil entity on the damn planet. And the only thing that will check this madness is African unity. And the only thing that will bring upon African unity is the African mind, the right minds of African who sincerely believe it, who are committed to it, who will work hard to achieve it. And unfortunately, my brother Sean, that's not a lot of us. that's not a lot of us on this planet, you know? So
I mean, it's not that it's not that it's, I mean, What it is just like there's just a dormancy in the way that we go about just I don't have to talk to people who may have a similar, you know, awareness. It's just that the attributes of what is our Africanness, mm-hmm. even in what we might call ratchet or lame or this, that, and the third, we can't seem to get it active out of a dormancy state.
Right.
We're all our people. It's just like we're not slaves. We were always fighting back. We freed ourselves.
Right.
We finagled that.
Yes.
I always think about like the 1850s. Like we were raising hell and a half in this country.
Yeah.
And it's just like we were out here making the inventions. We were out here in the fields. Like we ran the plantations. We just was tired of it. And we just people left, crossed, went to the north, signed up to the army, went right back south.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, the feeling for us, because we have been detached from Africa and constantly fed such negative things about us being African. We kind of hated that. And what we wanted to do was free ourselves physically. And then hopefully by doing so, be a part of the system, go to school, learn, become, industrious and become players with the, and see, our thing is we didn't understand that it was not going to happen. And even when we did understand and we created areas like a Rosewood, Tulsa, you know, Lane, Arkansas, Allentown in California, and places like that. What happened? The evilness, the selfishness, and the greediness of Europeans vamped on those places. They vamped on those places and destroyed them. And destroyed them. Because that's who in the hell they are. They destroyed. Let me get some more callers, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
No, thank you, Brother Sean. Thank you, my man. 646-646, good afternoon.
Oh, yo, what's happening, good brother?
How you doing, man?
Man, I'm hanging in there, listening and observing what you're saying about the cracker. You know, I just hope that the cracker die off sooner than later. It's a good thing that there are no more of them beasts being born. The unfortunate thing is that nobody wants to address and deal with is the overflux of these mulatto, sick-minded Negroes that are being born to these filthy, stinking Caucasian
Jay, that's the thing that they hope, because I'm speaking to them, are dying off. But this mulatto class, not only will it provide as a buffer, but they will marry Caucasians as well, who will marry Caucasians as well, and that's how we will live. Understanding that, you know, some will argue no, but the DNA of Caucasians is within our DNA. We left out of Africa, during migrations, and we went into Europe, got cut off by an ice age. We mutated. Europeans, Caucasians are a mutation of us out of survival, because everything that lives, Jay, it wants to live. It will challenge that environment. It wants to live, because if it doesn't, it will die. So it mutates. It fights against that environment. You know, here was a good example that I used to teach to the young people I used to work with back when I was in Milwaukee, that when we migrated, and we went into Europe, our bodies became short and stocky with hair all over, especially hair that had to cover down the back, stringy, had to cover our necks. Because why? The blood pumping.
Look like walking gorillas.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
That's the white man.
Yeah. He's short and stocky with hair all over his body to insulate him, because it's cold, damn it. It's cold consistently.
And one of the gorillas apes.
You know? And the hair on the back of your neck helps insulate the blood that flows from your heart to your brain. That has to happen, because if that doesn't happen, you die. So then as we moved east out of there, we got confronted by the mountains and the precipitation in the mountains, the snow. Now, if it snowed today and tomorrow when you got up and the sun is shining, you go outside, what you going to be doing? Exactly. You're going to be squinting because the glare of the sun off there causes you to, because of the glare off the sun, I mean, off the snow, causes you to, that's why Asians' eyes are slanted. I mean, this is just something, you know, yeah, it's just what it is, Jay. I don't make shit up. I'm just telling you.
Man, I'm just laughing, thinking about that slit-eyed bastard. You know what I mean? And that wicked tree. You know, it's amazing how you have ethnic groups who hate the African, but understands and knows that the African is the dead. But they hate the African.
Right.
They don't want to.
Right.
They don't want to get along with the African. They don't want to do nothing with the African. But always want to run to our first bastardized child, and it may not even have been our first bastardized child. That no good, filthy, stinking coppersoid, the Caucasian,
right.
Cracker. And you know, oh, you were talking earlier about Atlanta, where you at, God bless your soul,
oh,
a village of monkey men, Christian sisters. How, you know, everybody is talking about Stacey Abrams and all of that, and Latasha Brown and all of those Negroes. Let me ask you this. Now that Biden's in office, what's going to change in Atlanta?
Nothing.
What is Georgia going to get as the state?
Nothing.
Put him over the edge.
Nothing.
I mean, what is going to happen, in all honesty, in this country that's going to make the position of black people better for what they did for a cracker?
Nothing. The only thing that happened right now, the only thing that happened right now is that Negro who was in the Democratic Party, who attended Trump rallies and so forth, and being carried in the audience, he said, "I'm no longer going to be a Democrat. I'm going to be a Republican."
Jones. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he would. You're not missing. You're not missing nothing.
No.
Hopefully, his constituency will be intelligent enough to
right.
get rid of his black ass.
Right.
Because the bottom line is, a Negro like that doesn't serve any purpose other than one thing: to make his pocket and his friend's pocket fatter,
yeah.
Which is going to be the same thing that the great pork chop chicken eating pimp preacher Warnock is going to do for his
Warnock came in saying, "I'm going to be a great friend to Israel."
Now,
you know,
anytime you say you a great friend to Israel, you're saying to me that you believe in the principles and the values of apartheid and what South Africa did to my people.
Yeah.
Because it's basically
the same thing.
What they're doing
yeah.
to the Palestinians, even
yeah.
though a little bit worse, because they done just totally, in a sense, cleansed the Palestinians out of Palestine.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt.
I mean,
no doubt.
You know, you got to really look at what's been done to those people and how the world has gone along with it. And, you know, it's at the point now to where as the people in Palestine are suffering so much that the media don't even talk about it.
Yeah. And here you have these Jews who are there, who are Europeans, who are Ashkenazi.
Yeah.
You know, they have no right at all to that land. Judaism is the ideation, is the ideal, just like other religions, you know? But let me take some more callers, Jay. Just hang on.
Sure,
okay? All right, my brother. All right. Appreciate you, man. Unknown caller. I don't know. Where are you calling from? This is African Perspectives. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good morning.
It is. That's what I thought it was. It is, Paul. Good. Hey, my brother. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great, man.
Good.
You know, it's a fact. You know what? I actually thought it was a recording. Have you read that piece before about Argentina?
You know what? I'm trying to think, because I might have did that a few years ago.
I'm sure you did, because I actually thought it was a recording. Uh-huh. But it just made me think that, you know, well, it's pointless talking about the same rhetoric. We know we're not that organized, but there should be a national body monitoring what really is going on around the world, you know, because these statistics they pushed up. I mean, you said something one time. You said, no birth rate in America and whatever. You were talking about so-called African-Americans. And that was quite profound, because the general consensus is that, you know, well, we know that one of the Caucasian's fear is the branding of America.
Sure.
And that region. But, you know, a lot of these statistics are just lies. You understand them. We don't really have a body to really look into really what's going on. And it's pretty scary what you were talking about in South Africa. And in the reality, this is going on all over the place.
Right.
This is...
But see, Paul, South Africa is a jewel to the European because of what is there. Even though Nelson Mandela came in and all those things changed, they had constructive engagement and the Truth and Reconciliation Bush didn't mean a damn thing, because the South African Caucasian, the British and the Boers, they still run the country. They are in control of the military and they're in control of the money. They're still in control. And in many parts of the South Africa, in fact, there are areas of South Africa where it is Caucasian only. Africans can come in and work, you know, cut the grass or do this, that, and the other. There's sundown. There's sundown towns. I don't know if you had that in England, you know. But here in the States and right there, they have a sundown. You got to be out of that town by sundown. Otherwise, they're going to beat your ass and probably kill you. You know, so, you know, that has been going on in South Africa consistently, you know. And so now, based upon what Sister Susumi in Botswana sent me, they're saying we're trying to raise this population of Caucasians at least by 20% so we can control this thing the way we want to. We want to control the government, let alone the military and the money. We want to control it all once again and let South Africa be a beacon on the continent of Africa for Europeans. You know, I mean, already it's a destination place. At least it was before the pandemic. You know, many South Africans, you know, safaris, Cape Town, all that kind of stuff, you know. So, but
let me just say this quickly, Brother Ovich, because I know we ain't got a lot of time. You know, right now in England, right, we're under the most tyrannic, sociopathic, narcissistic, sociopathic, psychopath ideologies we could ever be under. Seriously, we're in something called Tier 4, which basically amounts to the fact that you can't leave your house unless you have something. They're telling people you cannot leave your house unless you have something important to leave your house for.
This is because of the pandemic? This is because of the pandemic? Or the plandemic?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Plandemic. Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, funny enough, right, I went to school with one of these, what we call MPs, Ministers of Parliament, yeah? She was in my class, yeah? I'm not going to say her name, but I'm just going to say that I always considered her a very strong person, an African-centered person, very strong in school she was. And I always, you know, gave her high respect. And, you know, she went on to be, she's quite a high flyer in the Ministry of Parliament. And just recently, something very shocking. I saw something go around the internet, yeah? With what they've done, they've got all the black MPs together, including her, to tell the people, the black people, that you must take the vaccine.
Mm,
Because what's happening now is the statistics say over 70% of black people are refusing to take the vaccine.
70%? Wow. I don't think it's that high in this country. I know it's high in this country too, though. But go ahead. Go ahead, Paul.
Majority of black people are awake. Well, let's just say for the sake of argument, they're awake somehow. They realize that this is a plan. So when you're talking about genocide,
Argentina, South Africa. It's taking place right here now.
Yes.
Right here now. And there's just no dispute. You know, why is it all of a sudden they are so concerned about black people getting vaccine? Why? Why? The reason? Because they want to terminate us, give us long-term diseases. Next 5 years, you'll be dropping down to cancer, heart disease, and all kind of nonsense that you've never experienced before. So that's the plan. And you know, we don't need to be coming on air, people coming here telling people, oh, well, I'm not telling you not to take the vaccine. Do you not know they are to kill you? They have a history of killing you off the planet.
Yep.
Wake up.
Yep. That's why.
You know, it's very serious what you're saying, Bubba.
That's why when I came on the program with the idea of the vaccine, I stated, I'm not, you know, saying you should take it or not take it. I'm just giving you the information, hoping you'll make an intelligent decision. But the bottom line is, if you're asking me personally, no, I wouldn't take it. I know this history. I know these people, and I do not trust them. You know, not one damn bit. And the fact is, they would use anything. Because what I talked about today, Jay, is Caucasian immigration, or the proliferation of Caucasians trying to reinvent this and put themselves in a position of taking other people's lands like they have done historically. And the fear, as Dr. Francis Cress Welsing said, that was a fear of them, of genetic annihilation. They recognize that when they went around the world and taking everybody's stuff in the name of, and then had sexual intimacy with the people they found, which was rape, when they raped the women and saw that the child 9 months later did not look like them, caused an innate fear in them that we must control this planet. We must control these people. You know? So let me take let me take this call here, Jay. Just hold on. I'm gonna go a little longer today. Not too much. Cause I know how Brother Elliot might be. 404-697. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hey, Brother Oshie. This is Sister Haiba. How you doing?
Hey, my sister. How are you? How have you been?
I'm good. I love your show. It is such a blessing to the community. Thank you for all your work and all your wisdom and knowledge and inspiration and everything. Thank you so much. And I was appreciating what the other brother that was just talking, what was his name, James? Brother from England.
Right, Brother Paul.
Paul, I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was appreciating what he was saying and it, tying it into what's going on here in the United States. So, Cicely Tyson just passed, okay? 2 weeks ago, she was very well and healthy, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, she sounded good. Well, I just...
Sister, no, 1 week ago.
Right,
1 week
ago.
She passed, and you know, they were trying to verify... They go to the elderly, they go into the churches and trying to force the elderly to take these vaccines, saying you're so vulnerable, we want to help you. Okay. And so then, you know, there was some talk that's what happened with her church. And then with and may her soul rest in peace and power. Beautiful.
Yes.
But
yes.
Like it's an attack on us. And then the same with Hank Aaron.
Yeah.
Now he was fine and well 2 weeks before, and the next thing you know, he's passed, and then they come out and say, well, he had the COVID. He had the COVID vaccine. You know, they try to push it on the elderly, and then they try to cover it up, you know, as if we're so ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're just, you know, they try to, like they're going to just cover it up, and we're going to go for it. They say, well, we did say he had the COVID, but he didn't die from the COVID. You can't equivocally say that, and then they're going to say, well, we don't, it was just too much. They're going to say that he could die from natural causes. Now, what is natural causes?
Yeah, I'm here.
Because you say what the natural cause is. I mean,
right.
that's not no medical definition.
Right.
That's natural cause.
But they use that a lot, don't they? Because what is it?
Pardon
was
me?
It was they use that a lot, don't they? Because the question becomes: was it heart failure?
Was it
respiratory failure?
Embolism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it respiratory?
You know,
there was a reason why you expired. And it's not just natural causes. Something stopped working.
It's so unacceptable to say that. And then, and then you're going to say, but it wasn't from COVID. No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, they said it. And then so what they get the pushback because they're saying, well, no, we don't want people to stop taking the vaccine. We can't let them know about, you know, the people dying from the vaccine. So it's just a diabolical plot, like what I call was saying, and it's really horrific. And they, mm-hmm. and they, that brother, so rest in peace too. He was a great Hank Aaron too. But
yeah.
this is what they're attacking our elderly, and it's like they said, why it's so important now for us to get vaccinated, you know, under the guise mm-hmm. that this is the vulnerable and you know, just taking off our yeah. elders like this.
Yeah. That's why, to me, every move that we make, it must be thought of. It must be thought about. Every move that we make. And it must be thought of in the context of African liberation. That's how I look at things. You know, what is good. And, you know, because like I said, this program and myself, as personally, I believe in independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Considering this, looking at that history. I appreciate you, dear. Thank you for listening, Brother Paul. Thank you. Be safe across the pond. All those others who called in, Brother Sean, and many others just called in to listen. Thank you once again. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend. You're listening to African. Well, no. Let me sign this program off like I'm supposed to. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure as hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day, a beautiful weekend. Remember, there's an ASCAC going on, Renoco got a thing going on, there's other things happening, so check it out if you can. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend, brothers. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. We will be victorious. Peace, family.
Peace, brother. I say.